This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids.
I would like to see them get another starter. I would like to see them get another reliever, and I believe they're going to do both. And I say that in strong confidence. They have a very strong farm system, and I'm being told by GMs in this industry that they are absolutely everywhere, talking about everybody. So I strongly believe that Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins are going for it, and they will make a big move or two between now and July 31st.
Did you need more confirmation? You just got it. Our friend Bruce Levine has told you the Cubs are going all in. That's Jim Bowden, who was just on with us, Raheem and Harris, on The Score. Last hour, talking about how he feels the Cubs are also all in. There's a lot of people saying it. We'll see what happens in the time coming up to the trade deadline. All indications point to that. And as far as the question of, well, why aren't you seeing more teams make deals right now, Marshall Harris? To me, it's because if you're a seller, which we know that the market is in its favor right now, if you have players to move away from your team, you can wait and see how high the bidding war is going to get for a lot of the individuals that contending teams like the Cubs think can make a difference in a playoff run.
You know what's crazy is if you look at the standings in Major League Baseball and you think, you know, oh, there's sellers that are ready to go. Yes, the White Sox are ready to go. The Athletics, no city, no name, even though they're in Sacramento.
Greens and yellows.
Yeah, the green and yellows, they're ready to go. 17 games under 500. The Colorado Rockies have been ready to go since, I don't know, a 9-50 start to the season.
Is that a start at that point? Like when you're a team go, oh, they're on a 22-4 run and it's the end of the first quarter.
To their credit,
that's just the score.
They're 10 and 15 since that 9-50 start. So
and 50.
And then you have, it's interesting because in the National League, you're thinking, okay, the Marlins, Pirates, Washington Nationals, they're all sellers. They should be, right? But I look up and I'm like, oh, the Marlins have won 7 in a row and are now 8 games out of a wild card spot, single digits with a half a season to go. The Pirates have won their last 4, 11 games out, along with the Washington Nationals, who had a bit of a rough slide but have seemingly gotten themselves back up. And over in the American League, Layla, the Orioles are only 7 games out. The Royals are only 5.5 games out. The Twins are only 4 games out. Rangers, Guardians, they're all within striking distance of a wild card spot. It's not over for them yet.
Well, even when we were talking to Ian Happ, trying to figure out who the best division was in baseball.
He was right. I did the math. The Central has the best record in baseball by virtue of the fact that it's the only division with 4 teams over 500, and then also their last place team isn't as bad as any other last place team except for one.
So essentially, aggregate win percentage
yep.
is what you're going with.
Yes.
And if you missed our conversation with Ian Happ or with Jim Bowden from earlier in the show, you can go back and listen with the Rewind feature, something you can only do in the Odyssey app. Search 670 The Score and tap earlier today to get started. But that's the point, too, is that when you have to ask, or you know you're in one of the contending divisions, and there are still many when it comes to, say, the NL West, Jim Bowden alluded to the fact that he thinks that the Diamondbacks are eventually going to become sellers. That is an eternity for a team like that, though. Still trying to figure out who they are, still having a lot of assets that can either be moved or can be retained if they think that they're a player or two away. Well, let's look at the records. Dodgers lead that division, of course, 53-32. Padres, second, 7.5 games back at 45-39. Giants are 45-40, so that's only a half game back of the Padres. The Diamondbacks are 2.5 games back of the Giants, so they're even right now at 42-42. I think to them, you know, we want to see guys like Zach Gallen get moved. We want to see guys like Merrill Kelly get moved. Because that means a higher likelihood for the Cubs that they might get a starting pitcher that would make a difference for their team. But I just don't necessarily know that you can guarantee that right now. They might still think that they're buyers in all of this. That's the challenge of the National League, too.
I think as long as they're at or above 500, the Diamondbacks, and they're within 4 to 5 games of a wild card spot, they're still alive. You need to be at or above 500, as in you win more games than you lose, and you need to be within striking distance of a playoff spot. That's what the beauty of having 6 playoff spots in each league is that teams hang around longer. You get a better quality of baseball for deeper into a season than we used to back in the day.
Yeah, and as we've mentioned, you know, the Cardinals, only 3 games back of the Cubs, 1 game back of the Brewers, who are in second. So all of that said, I think that that's why you're not seeing a lot of movement yet. Discussion for the Cubs wanting a pitcher has also addressed one Luis Severino, who, when the Athletics decided to sign him to a contract, I thought, oh, here the A's actually being intent, spending money.
That didn't last long.
3 years, $67 million. For them, that was a big deal. That was something that turned a lot of heads in baseball. I don't think any of us realized how bad the home road splits were going to be if you're a pitcher. Save the pitchers of the A's. Can somebody get him out of there? The home road split, 6.79 ERA for Severino, 3.04 on the road.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's because of that outfield. A lot of people think having no seats in the outfield in Sacramento is causing a lot of balls to fly more because there's nothing to stop the air from flowing.
I'll tell you this. The batting average on balls in play, home and away, the BABIP, if you will.
BABIP. BABIP.
I prefer BABIP. I feel like it gives it more of an edge. 342 at home is the BABIP. 235 on the road is the BABIP. You see?
Save Luis Severino. Somebody get him out of there.
Yeah, here on Rahimi and Harris, we're talking about what's going on with the trade market. And it is the first day of July. And we know that the last day of July is the trade deadline in Major League Baseball. So Luis Severino, one of many names that you're going to hear about from now until the end of the month as we try to figure out who the Cubs are in position for. And I want to address the stated needs today on July 1st, Layla. They need two starting pitchers.
Ugh. God.
Two starting pitchers.
We're up to two now.
No, yeah, I've always been on two.
I could be okay with one, but they need starting pitching, period.
Okay, if you add one starting pitcher, tell me who your five starters are.
Well, then at that point, your five starters are Shota Imanaga, Matthew Boyd, Jameson Taillon. I'm still with Cade Horton in this, and whoever number five is.
How much longer do you think Cade Horton's going to be pitching in 2025 based on the fact that he's never hit 90 innings as a professional baseball player?
Yeah, that's the concern. And if you recall in AAA, that was also the concern there, was he wasn't throwing many innings per outing at the time.
They were slow rolling him, and I get it. But I don't think they can slow roll him through. Here's the question.
We also need to pay attention to what Jordan Wicks is doing in AAA right now.
Okay, if that's the route that you want to go, because my whole thing is this. Cade Horton starts until you get the two starters, and then you get ready to put him in the bullpen. And that's where he can be the most effective. And maybe you don't need as much relief help as you think if you have the likes of Porter Hodge, if you have the likes of Ryan Pressly, Brad Keller. Obviously, at the back of the bullpen is Daniel Palencia. That's four guys right there. And then you go lefties with Caleb Thilbar. Talk about, obviously, with the swingman. I want Colin Ray to go back to the bullpen. I think he's been overexposed as a starter in his swingman role. So if you have Flexen, and then also if you have Colin Ray, that's seven guys right there. You add Ben Brown and Cade Horton potentially to your bullpen with real swing and miss stuff.
You don't have enough roster spots.
That's my point. So I think you should focus on getting two starting pitchers, one for innings purposes, and then one hopeful, somewhat frontline starter, or the closest thing we can find to a frontline starter in this pitching economy.
So you want two starters and what else?
Guys who can hit left-handed pitching. Guys who can hit left. Preferably a right-handed bat, but that's not necessarily a guarantee that they can hit left-handed pitching.
I feel like this is like any conversation where you feel like your team is still in it, and you're like, all we need is two starting pitchers and one guy who can hit lefty.
To be clear,
I'm not trying to diss you. It's just the hope. I feel like I've been there, but my team was like 10 games below 500.
But I think as we attack the trade market from a vantage point of, who are the Cubs or anybody else going after, you have to know your weaknesses. You have to know your deficiencies.
Yeah, you know, I've been a proponent of needing a starting pitcher. I don't necessarily think it has to be an ace. For the reasons that Jim Bowden talked about, teams will have to send the farm in order to get an offer that the Miami Marlins are going to listen to for Alcantara. That's what's going to have to happen. And the Cubs already had a very spendy trade, as we know, to get Kyle Tucker. I think they need to add to their bench. I have mentioned him before. I will say his name again. Mike Tauchman.
So Mike Tauchman's interesting, right? Because my initial reaction, and you know, I'm a big Mike Tauchman fan. I'm the one who told y'all to vote for Mike Tauchman to get him to phase two of the All-Star voting, which is open, by the way, so you need to go do that once per day between now and Thursday.
Send Mike Tauchman to the All-Star game.
Well, he's not one of the finalists, so he no longer can send Mike Tauchman to said All-Star game. Although,
being a little ridiculous.
He could be picked, because I couldn't tell you who the White Sox representative will be in the All-Star game.
You no longer think it's outright going to be a pitcher?
It could be a pitcher, but the pitcher I'm thinking of is Adrian Hauser, and he's only made like 7 starts, so probably not.
I mean, that's okay.
Is it okay? Is it really okay to have made half the starts of everybody else, basically, that's a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball? But back to the point of Mike Tauchman. His reverse splits are crazy. They go crazy. Not just this year where he's doing damage
crazy
versus lefties, but in his career, he has been a better hitter against left-handed pitching. He's also a guy who can go out and play a competent outfield spot. If I had to tell you Vidal Brujan or Mike Tauchman every single time, what would your answer be?
Mike Tauchman.
Okay.
You're right. In 2025, and it's a smaller sample size, we know that. There's only 114 at-bats because we know he was injured. But the averages as a lefty against lefties, batting average is .353. On-base percentage is .421. Slug is .765, and the OPS against lefties is .1186. Against righties, it's .268. Compare that to .353 against the lefties. .363 on base percentage compared to .421. .423 slug compared to .765. And then .786 compared to .1186. But he's been proven to be more reliable than he would indicate for the Cubs specifically. And that's why I think it might be a good fit.
Now,
I know I always do a crosstown trade every year.
No. But
I would suggest one, but I feel like that would be perhaps a reasonable one where the Cubs wouldn't have to give up a ton and could still focus on starting pitching that they need.
We're talking about trade prospects for the Cubs here on the first day of July, as the last day of the month will be the Major League Baseball trade deadline here on Raheem and Harris. And Mike Tauchman has been the subject of Layla's swoon. See, I can use it in that way.
I'm sorry, I just didn't cover good enough teams to have a June swoon.
She's swooning over Mike Tauchman, but you gave him that little sample. You gave him that, and you're like, you got any more of those reverse slits? What if I hit you with the career numbers for Mike Tauchman?
Let's go.
Versus righties and lefties. Versus righties, hitting .238 batting average. Versus lefties, .269. Versus righties,
nice.
A .344 on base percentage. Versus lefties, .358. The man can get on base. Slugging percentage versus righties, .382. Versus lefties, .388. He's better across the board against left-handed pitching. His OPS against righties, .725. His OPS against lefties, .746.
6-3-0. Need a legit third baseman who can produce offensively. Can't roll into October with Matt Shaw. Get all the pitchers you can, too. I agree with you, but here's the problem. So have the Cubs for the last 2 years, and it hasn't panned out either. Third base, as we know, has been a problem across Major League Baseball when it comes to offensive production. They had Isak Paredes. We saw him have a great series for the Astros when he played. We saw also previous to that, Jamer Candelario didn't turn out well either. Different scenarios, of course. But at the same time, not as easy to plug and play as you would think at the deadline, even when the numbers tell you it might be.
Two things here, Layla, as we go back to the text line here on Raheem and Harris, 6-3-0. Marshall, most people call it BABIP, like dad, bab, not babip. You know what? I'm not most people. Babip.
Oh, we all have fun with words.
Also, 847. How the hell, hell's in all capitals, by the way, can a team that's supposed to win their division and win a series in the playoffs need two starting pitchers? Cubs fans are a special breed. Well, here's how. They started the year with this guy. His name's Justin Steele. He's no longer here. They were going to probably need a starting pitcher even if they had Justin Steele and Shota Imanaga at the top. Now, without Justin Steele, they need two instead of one. And the whole point is not to just get to the playoffs, but to contend for a World Series title. You need top-tier pitching to do that. They don't have Justin Steele.
I just don't know that they have the capital either in return with players. The same 847, also, if you scroll up to the top of the text, their history What the blank, dude? You have to wear a shirt, man. Jesus. I'm telling you, the reaction text to Russ Dorsey's shirt at the Jewel story, I'm going to be laughing about this over the next several days.
Russ has officially jumped the proverbial shark.
How?
With his whole fitness kick, his whole brand. When you're trying to justify being shirtless in a public space indoors like that, that's when you know you've gone too far.
I just think it's gotten into Zoolander territory.
You going to tell him that next week?
Yeah, I'll tell him he's Zoolander.
Okay.
Is he going to get into a gasoline fight with some other male models next?
That seems like a bad idea, always. Yeah.
You can't out-sexy the law, Russ.
I just have this image of like Russ standing outside of a Jewel, like, hey, mistering someone for a bottle of water. Like, hey, mister, I'm a little too jacked to get in here. Can you get me a water bottle?
It's like a kid who doesn't have his ID trying to get cigs at the store. Can
get
you go
a case
in there and
beer.
Buy me some cigs, a case of beer? It's like, can you get me a water so I can do my Ashton Hall routine in the morning?
Oh, yeah, the Saratoga water. I saw the truck the other day on the street, and I took a picture just because it's so ridiculous. But did I now know what Saratoga water is because of this morning routine? Yes. I'm a sucker for marketing. I want to hear from Luis Severino about this, because now I feel like my trade deadline motto should be Save Luis Severino.
I mean, you know, if they trade me or not, you know, I'm going to keep grinding, trying to be my best self, going out there. You know, I can't do nothing about it when they get mad or not, you know. That's not, I just say what it is, you know. I'm not going to go out there. If you ask me how I feel pitching at home, I'm not going to lie to you, you know. Because at the end, you guys going to figure out if it's a lie or not. So my job is here to try to pitch. And every time you ask me a question, be honest with you guys. So that's what I did. I was not trying to, hurt nobody's feelings about saying that. But I think, you know, I'm not the only one who feels the same way. But, you know, like I said, I will try my best to just, you know, concentrate on what I need to do and concentrate on getting better. I feel pretty good. I feel healthy, you know. I feel like movement on my pitches are there. I just need to just get in a good stretch, you know.
Come on.
That music really sets it off, though, doesn't
it?
You
know, he thought that the A's were building something. Unfortunately, the thing they're not building is a ballpark anytime soon. So poor Luis Severino is stranded. He's stranded with these terrible home road splits. Can somebody please save Luis Severino? They're not going to build that ballpark before they get that contract done. He's only got a 3-year deal. And as we know, great ballparks and Rome weren't built in a day.
If you donate today, you could save Luis Severino.
He deserves to be saved. He did a nice thing. And the guys are like, hey, we want to pay you money. We're building a team here and all this. And it's like, yeah, I love that you guys are doing this. Sign. Wait, where are we playing? What's happening?
In the arms of the A's.
The outfield is next to a body of water where, as we know in Chicago, the wind increases next to said body of water in open space. Ah! And he knows that he's like, I'm not going to lie to you. You would know if I was lying. No, we don't, Luis. Your honesty deserves to be rewarded.
Poor guy. But you know what? He'll be out of there soon enough. Don't you worry. The A's won't be out of Sacramento, but he'll be out of there.
I don't know, because there's been a lot of guys recently on the A's where I was like, oh, that guy's probably getting traded. And then, no, they kept them.
We'll see.
Somebody needs to get this guy. It's not fair. Won't somebody think of the pitchers? We have a wonderful guest coming up next. I love that we get to talk to him on one of the main days of NBA free agency. He's a friend of the Midday Show, and he is back. Mark Deeks, joining us at Mark Deeks NBA on Twitter. You know him as a basketball operations analyst and NBA salary cap expert. So let's talk to him next while I figure out a plan for poor Luis Severino next on The Score.
Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You guys keep talking about, you know, building depth, but at the end of the day, you still need that dude. Where are you guys going to find that dude?
You know, there's other players in this building on this team who, if they continue to develop, continue to work on a daily basis, they may get there. And we have the resources in place, the coaching staff, player development to support that.
That was Mark Eversley, The Bulls general manager.
Get your super serum ready. We're going to inject that dude that we already have in our development. And he's going to be like Captain America, Steve Rogers style. Except for probably not.
A man we can discuss that with, Marshall, is joining us right now in the Circle Resort and Casino Hotline, CircleLasVegas.com. He's a friend of the show. It's always nice to hear him. Mark Deeks. Mark Deeks is at Mark Deeks NBA. He's a basketball scout and writer and is an NBA cap analyst. And typically, I would want to start with talking about the Bulls themselves. But Mark, this is July 1st. We've already seen a lot of crazy deals happen earlier today. One of the most notable being the Bucks going after the Bucks waiving Damian Lillard and making a lot of moves there, extending certain players. They're going after others. How do you evaluate just what they were able to do with Damian Lillard to free up money to get Miles Turner?
It's completely unfathomable, isn't it? We're now in a world where Damian Lillard is being waived and stretched. Luka Doncic is a Laker. What is the point, guys, of making any predictions when this is the league today and compared to 6 months ago? It is crazy. I can't imagine anybody saw this coming. I say that from the media side, the fan side, but also, as far as I'm aware, no one in the league really anticipated this. I'm sure there were some, but it's news to me. It is a dumbfounding move, but not in a bad way. I compare it, I think, to Denver with their moves that they made, quote-unquote, yesterday, when they traded Michael Porter for Cam Johnson. And they broke through the concrete that they had built up. They got stuck in this salary cap quagmire where they had lots of payroll on the books. And it's not about whether they can afford to cut the checks. They can. It's about what that restricts you from doing going forwards. Denver was stuck. Milwaukee was stuck. Boston were stuck. These teams have all taken drastic measures. None more drastic, I would say, than waiving Damian Lillard. Wow. Of course, he's injured, but who saw that coming? You invest your future, every single tradable asset you've got, into this man, and then you waive him? It's a staggering move, but I don't hate it. They're doing something drastic because they're in a drastic position. They have to keep Giannis. They couldn't get better. They can't do this with minimum salary Gary Trent signings. They have to try something. So fair play to them for trying, as long as they haven't annoyed Giannis.
Yeah, that's the goal, right? Keep Giannis happy, keep Giannis here, and build around him, especially in an Eastern Conference that appears to have a very soft ceiling when we're talking about 2025-26 season. Meanwhile, there's the Bulls, who are mired in mediocrity, to say the least. I'm curious as to your thoughts on the Bulls' approach right about now, and if anyone is in a worse situation than the Bulls are heading into this offseason.
The two different answers to your two different questions there. Are there teams in a worse situation? Yes. Are the Bulls doing the right thing? No. Things aren't dreadful. Let's not look at Charlotte, for example, where they've been for so long. The Bulls are a playing team. It's not good enough, but it's not dreadful. But where's it going? That is the question. That has long been the question. They are not taking the bottoming out route that is customary, not mandatory, but customary within team building. They're not prioritizing getting back draft assets in the players that they do trade. I believe they've got one in total for the quartet of Caruso, Levine, DeRozan, and whoever it is, I've forgotten. I believe they got one draft pick back out of those four trades.
It was their own, though. That's the problem.
Oh, Lonzo. Exactly. Yeah, it was Lonzo as the fourth, yes.
There you go, Lonzo. Thank you. Now, they've got Josh Giddey in the process of that, but that's, again, we're assuming he will resign. I am assuming he will resign. That's fine. Is Josh Giddey your man? No. Is Kobe White your man? No. Patrick Williams isn't. We know that. Where's the foundational piece? The Bulls have been open about trying to build with this 8 or 9 good player scenario. Toronto did it a few years ago. Fine in theory, but they are so far short of that. Look at Toronto's bench when they were doing that. They had Fred VanVleet, all-star. Norman Powell nearly was. OG Anunoby, that's beyond the Siakam, Kyle Lowry in his prime, Kawhi Leonard, top of the shop. They are so far short of that. And the only way they're going to get there is to land about 6 or 7 winning lottery tickets, and without having that many to work with. They don't have assets. They don't have upside. They have some decent players, but even when they trade them, they're not getting a lot back for them. No offense, Isaac Okoro, he's not moving the needle at all. So I don't like where it's going, because I don't think it's going anywhere.
Well, that's the point, though, Mark, is you said yes to one answer and no to the other as far as being dreadful, because the answer was where they are and that they have no vision going forward, I would say they are in the most dreadful situation because nothing is going to change as these front office people got extensions. There's no pressure to change the way that they are doing business.
I would also just like to point out the way he says dreadful, Marshall, versus the way Mark says dreadful. it's so much better coming across the Atlantic.
Well, thank you very much. If it wasn't for this accent, I'd have had a very different career. So thank you. I'm dining out on the novelty of being the Englishman. It's landed me, it's done all right for me so far, so I'm going to keep going with it. Any other English phrases you want, let me know. I'm your man. I do agree with you, though, broadly, on the point about how there is a lack of reason for optimism, I guess, lack of hope. There are worse situations. I come back to Charlotte again because they've been considerably worse for a lot longer. The balls are more sort of mediocre, meh, if you will. They are not, for a franchise so storied and with such a market share and such legacy, they should be doing more than this. There is a lack of ambition, I think, that defines it. However, let's say there is one or two good trades in the pipeline. We could be looking at a 50-win team. A 50-win team with enough, particularly in the form of Noah Asenga, who was a good pick, to be able to build on top of that and get somewhere. I don't see much reason, given what they've done over the last couple of reasons, to assume that will happen, but it is possible if they are selectively aggressive, just as Indiana were when they targeted Pascal Siakam. Indiana, despite having a very different budget and very different potential if they chose to use it, chose a similar team-building strategy of never bottoming out, never going the whole Philadelphia 76ers process or Oklahoma City Thunder style of getting every single pick possible, of staying in that mid-range and hoping to strike gold. They did so with Siakam, and they really did so with Tyrese Halliburton. It is a huge ask for the Bulls to do the same. It requires a level of foresight and personal development and asset management that we haven't seen from them. But if they can strike gold, they're going to get away with it. So hope for that.
Well, I also think, Mark, and we're talking to our friend Mark Deeks, who says dreadful way better because he's British. The accent's just cooler. It just is. Yeah, you know that. We know that. He's a basketball operations analyst and NBA salary cap expert. You can check out his work on heavy.com and hoopshype.com. And I also think that, I said this earlier in the show, I feel like the Bulls have maybe voluntarily somewhat, when you look at how creative teams are getting with some of these deals, because they don't have a lot of draft picks to move in addition to something else, they may have painted themselves into a corner when you consider the financial commitment that they made to Patrick Williams, even though it's, relatively speaking, team-friendly, and to Nikola Vucevic. You know, what are your thoughts on those two contracts kind of putting them in this scenario?
Yes, I have to agree with you. Patrick Williams has not lived up to the money and doesn't look like he's going to. Vucevic, you've got some resale value there, but it's very little. I think in reality, it'll be at best a sideways move. I think they should look to do that with Vucevic in particular. In the case of Williams, I think you ride this one out at least until the next deadline, possibly until next summer. He has to grow substantially for this to have any ambitions of working as an era of Bulls basketball, if you will. And the fact that the growth rate has been so very slow on both ends of the court means any dream of getting a Siakam type just isn't possible. You're barely looking at an NBA caliber starter, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. I mean that looking at the numbers and the comparisons to those around him. So it's possible for you to fit Siakam into that 8 or 9, I believe it was, that Castanova said was the crux of their dream of having 8 or 9 good players. It's possible that he can be one of them, but he can't be, as we look at it today, one of the top 4 or 5 that is required. He's not paid like it, admittedly, but he's not paid a favourable contract. It just makes another net negative, or at the very least net neutral asset on a team with too many of those. I think you have to wait it out for now, give him a chance to rebuild his value, potentially kick on as a player, but there's urgency there, or otherwise it's a lost pick.
That word you used, urgency, I've heard it before, but I just haven't seen it exhibited in this city as far as the front office of a professional basketball team in quite some time. Mark, looking at this year and what you see the Bulls' potential being, we were asking ourselves, what's the ceiling for this Bulls group as it is, knowing that Nikola Vucevic may very well likely finish out his contract in Chicago, knowing that Kobe White, Ayo Dosunmu could very well be Bulls for the rest of the season. What do you see the ceiling being for this team?
45 wins, pretty much, as constructed. That assumes Josh Giddey's coming back. 45 is probably your top. I'm not saying that's likely, I think you're probably more likely to have 35, but 45 is your top. They will be in the playoff picture, barring injury-related disaster. You can't legislate for the injuries. We might look silly if they end up winning 25 if they get serious injuries. But injuries will happen to someone, possibly them. Fine. But that 35 to 45 win range, they are still in. They haven't got worse here. They haven't got better. Fine. But they haven't got worse. The Levine DeRozan team peaked. There was enough in the second half of last season with the Zach Collins, Trey Jones acquisitions, etc., to be able to at least sustain. I don't see growth potential. I don't see urgency, as you say, Marshall. That's the word that's not used with regards to this team. It can't be. I don't see those things, and you need to see those things for a prognosis. They will, however, probably stay at a level, plateau perhaps. If that's not enough, but it will put them in that 40 wins, 8 to 10th seed. One good trade, maybe they're up to 6th range. It's better than it used to be, I guess, when we're talking about 20 years ago, back when they were bottoming out and we're looking at 30 wins and a triangle offense. It's a little better, but there is still no urgency.
30 wins in a triangle offense. That is not a sales pitch or a marketing slogan that I think is going to work in today's NBA. Mark, I do want to ask you, since you are a salary cap expert, we've talked to you a lot about the evolution of the league, even over the last few years that you've been on the Midday Show. Given what you've seen in the past, like 48 hours, how do you think, what team do you think has really stood out to you as far as maneuvering well in this new CBA with the aprons and the luxury taxes and just trying to get a competitive team together?
Earlier on, I said about the Denver Nuggets, and I would stand by that one, especially considering that they've seemingly now acquired Jonas Valanciunas, a quality backup center for only Dario Saric, who wasn't in the rotation anyway. They've added at a time when they could have cut. Now, they had to trade their 2032 first in order to do so, to free up that very concrete that I was describing. That will hurt them in 7 years' time. Let's worry about that in 7 years' time, because in 7 years' time, Nikola Jokic will be 37. We'll worry about that then. For now, they've been able to reopen a competitiveness window that was looking lost when they fired their head coach with 3 games to go in the past season. Them for one. Secondly, Atlanta Hawks. They are doing well. They've had a personnel change in the front office, and it is evident. They were able to not only win the bidding war for Nikhil Alexander-Walker. When did the Hawks last win a bidding war? They also were able to take on Kristaps Porzingis by taking advantage of Boston's need to cut salary. They fleeced the Pelicans for an extra unprotected first-round pick next season by trading down a mere 5 spots. I'm seeing some dancing there, Marshall, and it is justified. It is absolutely justified.
That could have been the Bulls.
It could have been the Bulls. It should have been the Bulls. But it wasn't. We can only work with what we know. But because the Hawks are now taking advantage of the very situations in which they used to be the ones getting taken advantage of, they have become trendsetters. They have become pioneers. They now have Luke Kennard, who will be an 8-figure expiring contract. They have that pick that can go with it. They've still got some trade exception money left over. They have growth potential from Zachary Rhys-Eshay, Okongwu, from Dyson Daniels' breakout defensive star. And, of course, they've got the actual superstar in Trae Young.
I don't know if Trae Young's a superstar because that man's inefficient. I do not like his game. But I understand everything else you said. I agree with everything else you said.
We talked a lot about the Hawks in our pre-show meeting, actually.
Yeah.
There you go.
I appreciate you, Mark. Thanks so much. I mean, this has been... I don't know what to... It's been a very good visit from you across the pond.
I know. It's great to hear from you, Mark. You've always been a great, appreciated guest on the show. If you want to hear more from Mark, you can check his work out at heavy.com and hoopshype.com. He's also on Twitter at MarkDeeksNBA. Thanks again for joining us, Mark. And the fact that we got a dreadful in from you is just perfect.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. If you want me to record your voicemail inbox messages or something, just let me know.
I think we actually would. Yeah, I would be all for that. We'll come up with something creative. We'll get on this for sure. Our man across the pond, Mark Deeks. It is a great accent on Rahimi and Harris on the Score. I also want to remind everybody, we're not just talking basketball. We talked a lot of baseball today, and the Cubs are back home tonight at Wrigley Field to start a series against the Guardians. Guard that. Guard your respective opposing team's ERAs. It's nice weather outside. Pre-game coverage begins at 6:30, first pitch at 7:05 on the Score and the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. I love the Atlanta Hawks discourse going on throughout our entire show as to whether or not the Hawks got better. This is a very like first take kind of question. Did the Hawks get better?
Yeah, the Hawks got better. The Bulls missed a golden opportunity, a platinum opportunity, Absolutely. Has been confirmed by any and every person we have asked since we learned that Joe Dumars could have traded that unprotected Pelicans pick, first rounder in 2026, to the Bulls. But they didn't.
And we're just sitting here in silence now. Like, that's the thing, is you start to play out, like, what could have been and what's going on, and don't you feel better with assets? And how about this? Next, thanks to our man Ray, a wild tale that involves Dallas Cowboys training camp, a barber, and Michael Irvin. Chaos ensues on The Score.
You're listening to Raheemy and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What do we have here, Ray? Well, you didn't expect me to put you on the spot, but I just like talking to you.
Well, yeah, this is a crazy story here involving Michael Irvin, Dallas Cowboys training camp, and a barber. And the guy that put this on our radar is actually Marshall.
Yes, Jeff Perlman is on a podcast talking about Michael Irvin being that guy. And if you're wondering what kind of guy he is, well, just listen to this story as it's told.
I always used to bring in a barber to training camp because where they trained, it was very hard to find someone who did black hair, which is a problem for any black kid growing up in America in a white town. You can't find a good barber. And they bring a barber in. And the Cowboys had a offensive lineman named Everett McIver who went to get his haircut. And Michael Irvin goes seniority. And Everett McIver, I think, was in his second year. All the offensive linemen are like, don't get up, don't get up. Mm-hmm. And Irvin's like, seniority. And Everett McIver's like, you. And he's refusing to get up. And they start getting in a pushing match. And Michael Irvin grabs the barber scissors and stabs him in the neck and drags it along.
What?
And blood is spouting everywhere and blah, blah, whole thing. It's a crazy scene. And Michael Irvin at the time was on probation. So if that had gotten out, he's going to jail. So the Cowboys never reported it, gave Everett McIver a nice payoff.
So that was on the Going Deep with Chad and JT podcast, author Jeff Perlman telling that story about the Cowboys. And he would go on to talk about how Michael Irvin somehow was the guy who was holding everyone accountable on the football field and in the locker room, but also wilding out when things did not go to the way he designed and wanted.
I remember that coming out, and I remember hearing about that story. Like, that was something that I originally, I believe, came out, yes, in 2008. And the headline on ESPN Page 2, RIP to a fantastic website. I love Page 2 on ESPN. Jeff Perlman, Cowboys turn a blind eye toward trouble. The third paragraph in this story, in case you're wondering how life has changed since then, says, as John McCain might say, my friends, we have heard this all before.
Well, here's my question.
He even includes Jerry Jones's first name in here. He went Gerald.
So that story comes out in 2008. He's inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2007. If the story comes out before he gets voted in, does that affect his Hall of Fame candidacy?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Not at that point.
I'm just curious.
The dominance of Michael Irvin's career received, especially like at the time, you know, the how many years he had in the league, you know, the prolific nature of it, the Cowboys 3 Super Bowls and all of that.
He was also called the unquestioned leader of that team, not Troy Aikman, but Michael Irvin. So there's also more to it than just that. It's the fact that you understand what role Michael Irvin played in the team's success.
That was an excerpt from the book, Boys Will Be Boys, The Glory Days and Party Nights of the Dallas Cowboys Dynasty.
Listen, we all got a part to play. Sometimes you're the stabber, sometimes you're the stabby.
And I killed a guy with a trident.
Brick, I've been meaning to talk to you about that. You should probably lay low for a while.
Is this like a known story? I've never heard about this in my whole life. You stabbed a guy.
Yeah, it happens. People get stabbed all the time, man. It's not good, but it happens.
Usually it's incidental, unless it's intentional.
Yeah.
Michael Irvin grabs the barber scissors and stabs him in the neck.
Like, you can be accidentally impaled by something or stabbed.
Yeah.
Then it's incidental.
I was almost accidentally impaled on Saturday doing an outdoor workout. They had like a bar, a rod and a tree, and they were like the bar for like weights. And they were like trying to put it in the tree, and I was on the other end, and I was about to like pop up because I was tying my shoe, and they were like, perfect timing. I tapped me on my shoulder, like hold me down. I was like, yo, what's going on? And then I looked up and saw that I was going to get stabbed by the barbell.
Also, anybody who had a pencil at any point in their life, oh, as pencils, a child,
yeah,
you probably accidentally stabbed yourself with a pencil at some point or another.
Or someone else.
It happened to me.
Or maybe it wasn't an accident.
Is that the closest you were to death, Marshall, ever?
No. I got my foot run over when I got hit by a car. That's probably the closest.
Were you flush with cash afterward?
One day, we're talking about barber store. I was a barber. Did I tell you that story about when I was in first grade? I don't think we have time, but I cut off some hair when I was in first grade. Or no, sorry, that was kindergarten, 5K.
You were a kindergarten barber?
Well, not intentionally.
Oh, no.
I mean, kind of intentionally. I mean, I just wanted to see if the plastic covered scissors would do something, and they did. And then there was a lump of hair on the floor. Yeah, not mine.
Did you get in trouble?
What do you think?
Oh, my gosh. As I'm hearing this story unfold.
Yeah, sometimes you just make decisions as a youngster that are not wise decisions because you're a kid.
That is very, very true. Although I think Michael Irvin was a whole adult at the time that this happened.
He was a grown man. Grown. Super grown, in fact, when he decided to do that. He was challenged, and he's like, you want to challenge me? This is what happens when you challenge me.
Yeah, messing with Michael Irvin would not be on my list of things to do. Miami, one of 17 kids, I believe? No.
Also, Adam Sandler, I would love to mess with him, but he's a nice guy. I don't know why I would mess with him. I would love to hoop with
him.
You
could ask him the essential question, is shampoo or conditioner better?
You're really stuck on that Billy Madison, huh?
It's a good, it was a good quote, of course.
Caller 6 to the contest line, the score contest line, that's 312-540-0670, will win a pair of tickets to see Adam Sandler when his You're My Best Friend tour makes its stop at the United Center. That's on October 20th. Tickets, by the way, are available at Ticketmaster.com. That's caller 6 to the score contest line right now, 312-540-0670.
Oh my God, 847. I stabbed myself with an oyster knife on Christmas. Trip to the ER. Oh, I hope you feel better. See?
When we come back in transition, as part of transition, can I tell you my story about going to Red Lobster?
Yes.
Okay, because I went to Red Lobster this past weekend.
This past weekend?
For the first time.
You're waiting till now to tell us?
Well, we're up against it. It's a good tease, right?
Yeah, you buried the lead, man.
We'll talk Red Lobster, right? With
Spiegel and Holmes.
Yeah.
Next on the score.